look at our top stories this hour. Iran says the director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency has failed to remain impartial and is making anti-Iran comments beyond his technical capacity. Syria condemns Turkey's plan to establish a so-called safe zone in the occupied northern part of the country, saying it will use all means to end the occupation. Also, the UN refugee chief slams UK's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda as, quote, all wrong, saying it sets a catastrophic precedent. Thank you for joining us. Iran has defended its measures in response to the recent resolution against the country's nuclear program by the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Definitely, we couldn't let the political and non-technical measure of the agency go unanswered. Our actions have been decisive and proportionate. What Iran is doing now falls strictly under its nuclear safeguards obligations. What Iran has stopped doing is its voluntary measures. It is unfortunate if the IAEA's director general would not know this or intentionally pose Iran's measures differently. Iran is entitled to end the commitments it undertook as a goodwill gesture when the other party violates a formerly agreed obligation. Therefore, Iran's measures create no proliferation worries.
The spokesman also said the IAEA's resolution is driven by Israel and backed by its Western allies. Khatibzadeh also slammed the IAEA chief for his recent meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister in Tel Aviv, saying it was a meeting in the wrong place at the wrong time and with the wrong person. They said the agency's director general has failed his duty to remain impartial and has been making comments against Iran beyond his technical capacity. The spokesman also dismissed the director general's comments that Iran's measures impede an agreement in the Vienna talks. He said the obstacle to the talks remains to the U.S.'s refusal to fulfill its obligations under the 2015 agreement. Syria has condemned Turkey's plan to establish a so-called safe zone in the occupied northern part of the country as, quote, brutal aggression. The Syrian People's Assembly made the remark in a statement saying Turkey's plan is aimed at causing demographic changes in the area. Damascus said Turkey's efforts to occupy more Syrian territory threaten regional and international peace and security. Damascus emphasized that it has the right to use all means to counter the illegitimate presence of the Turkish troops along with affiliated terrorist groups. Last month, the Turkish president said Ankara was planning to create a 30-kilometer safe zone along its border with Syria, a move Damascus denounced as a shameful act. The UN refugee chief has denounced the UK government's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda just a day before the first plane was due to depart. Filippo Grandi described London's plan as, quote, all wrong. The UN agency has expressed concerns about a lack of legal redress in Rwanda and potential discrimination against asylum seekers. The UN refugee chief warned the plan sets a precedent that is catastrophic. On Monday, a UK Court of Appeal upheld the decision to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. That was after a high court refused to grant a temporary injunction suspending the first flight. The UK government has shrugged off criticism of the plan. It says the one-way flights to Rwanda are aimed at deterring others from entering Britain through the English Channel by illegal routes. Over 10,000 people have crossed the channel in small boats so far this year. Nearly two decades after the UK's participation in the US-led invasion of Iraq, the man who took Britain to war has received one of the country's highest honors from the Queen. But to those who opposed the illegal invasion from day one, Tony Blair has blood on his hands and should stand trial at The Hague. Saeed Pourreza has this report from a protest against the former Prime Minister's knighthood in London.
Reading out the names of fallen British soldiers in Iraq while a man responsible for their deaths and millions more is honored. Only meters away, a protest organized by Stop the War Coalition calling for former Prime Minister Tony Blair's knighthood ceremony to stop.
It's an absolute outrage that someone who lied to the people, lied to Parliament, lied to the Cabinet, took us into an illegal war which led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people and destroyed a country should be given a knighthood. I mean, it's a disgrace.
The biggest of those lies in the so-called Iraq War dossier, a claim that former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein possessed mass murder weapons.
We knew in September 2002 that the dossier amounted to nothing. We were told it proved there were weapons of mass destruction. Everybody serious who looked at that said it didn't prove anything of the sort. Blair was determined to go to war regardless. He was determined whatever the evidence said. So essentially they cooked up the evidence.
In 2016, all the lies were exposed by the so-called Chilcot Report that concluded Iraq posed no immediate threat at the time of the 2003 invasion. For Tony Blair, though, who defended his decision to go to war, that has not meant a war crimes tribunal, but the UK's most prestigious knighthood. To anti-war activists, that is a dangerous precedent.
Well, it's trying to make it easier to go to war in future. It's trying to say to politicians, even if you go to war and it's illegal, it's criminal, it's based on lies, it has nothing but devastating impact, you can still be honoured, it'll be forgive and forget.
But forgive and forget they have not. Tony Blair continues to be one of the most detested politicians at home and abroad.
Nearly two decades since the Iraq War, Tony Blair is known by tens of millions here and abroad as a war criminal, despite efforts to reinvent himself as a visionary leader, which is why these protesters say the only court Tony Blair should be attending today is not a royal one. Saipur is up, London.
The Northern Ireland Protocol still remains a sticking point between the UK and the EU. Now the bloc threatens legal action after London introduced legislation to unilaterally revise Northern Ireland's post-Brexit trade arrangements. European Commission Vice President Maroš Šefčovič said Brussels would consider reopening a suspended infringement procedure against Britain. They said the procedure aims to protect the EU's single market from risks posed by violation of the protocol. Šefčovič warned UK's unilateral action negatively affects the mutual trust between London and Brussels. He stressed the Europeans would renegotiate neither to divorce deal or Northern Ireland's trade protocol. On Monday, the UK government presented legislation to Parliament to overhaul the Northern Ireland protocol. London believes the implementation of the protocol has damaged trade within the UK. It says the protocol has led to unnecessary bureaucracy for businesses moving goods between Britain and Northern Ireland. Pro-Russian forces in the Donetsk region have requested reinforcement from Moscow following reports of heavy shelling of residential areas. A local official in Donetsk says the Ukrainian forces have, quote, crossed all lines and used prohibited methods of warfare. The local sources also say a maternity hospital has been damaged due to massive artillery shelling of Donetsk by Ukrainian forces. Regional health officials say the hospital's patients and staff were already evacuated and were not injured in the attack. The Donetsk area has been subjected to heavy rocket and artillery attacks by the Ukrainian military over the past few days. The shelling became particularly strong on Monday with dozens of incidents registered by local authorities. Our correspondent Johnny Miller is following the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war, which has now been concentrated in Ukraine's eastern region. Earlier, he gave us an update on the situation there and how the international community is responding to it. Take a listen.
It looked like they'd taken Severodonetsk, but the battle for Donbass looks like it'll continue to be long and hard. Russia is being accused of war crimes in Kharkiv at the moment, and the Ukrainian army has just been shelling where I am now, the center of town. I just went outside to find my neighbors sheltering in the corridor. So the war continues very much here. There is some increasing signs that some people, some countries, at least behind the scenes, are calling for peaceful negotiation. Indeed, the NATO head, Jens Stoltenberg, talked yesterday suggesting that this will that this war will have to go to the negotiating table at some point. But at the moment, that does still seem a long way off. And it looks like one side or the other is going to have to make a major breakthrough on the front lines for any side to start thinking about negotiations.
The NATO Secretary General says Sweden has taken important steps to meet Turkey's demands for approving Stockholm's application to become a member of the military alliance.
I welcome that Sweden has already started to change its counterterrorism legislation and that Sweden will ensure that the legal framework for arms export will reflect their future status as a NATO member with new commitments to allies. These are two important steps to address concerns Turkey has raised.
Jens Stoltenberg says he hopes that Sweden and Finland would join NATO as soon as possible. The two Nordic countries applied to join the alliance last month in response to Russia's military operation in Ukraine. But their applications faced opposition from Turkey, which cites their support for Kurdish militants and a previous decision by the two to withdraw arms export licenses to Turkey. China has lashed out at the United States after Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin accused Beijing of adopting a more coercive and aggressive approach, in the region, including near Taiwan.
I would like to stress that by repeatedly spreading disinformation and painting an ugly picture of China, the U.S. could only further expose its ill intention to sow discord and the true nature of its hegemonic practices, an exercise of power politics.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman blamed the U.S. for fueling tensions by militarizing the Asia-Pacific region. He cited America's increasing deployment of military jets and warships in the South China Sea. He also accused Washington of supporting those who are seeking the independence of Taiwan, saying such measures are the biggest threat to the peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. Beijing is opposed to Washington's growing military and diplomatic ties with Taiwan, a self-ruled island that China considers as part of its territory. Recently, President Joe Biden also angered China after he vowed to defend Taiwan militarily if attacked.
China and the U.S. are locked in a growing war of words over the self-ruled island of Taiwan, which Beijing considers as part of its territory. But now, amid simmering tensions between the superpowers, at the Shangri-La Dialogue Security Summit in Singapore, Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin accused the Chinese military of provocative and destabilizing activities near Taiwan. During the same event, the Chinese Defense Minister hit back at the U.S., saying Beijing had no choice but to fight if attempts are made to separate Taiwan from China.
If anyone dares to see Taiwan from China, we will not hesitate to fight. We will fight at all costs, and we definitely will fight to the very end. This is the only choice for China.
I think it was very clear the exchange that General Wei had with Secretary Austin was quite straightforward as far as we understand. And his speech was also, of course, very sharp in terms of outlining what the Chinese were prepared to do if Taiwan would declare for independence. Now, both these people laid out their positions on this, but the question is still very unclear how far the United States is willing to go in trying to use Taiwan in their attempt to bring together the countries of Asia as a counter to China.
But China also struck a more pacifying tone, calling for a stable China-U.S. relationship. Wei stated that the China-U.S. relation is at a critical and crucial juncture. He added that Beijing believes a stable Sino-U.S. relation serves the interests of both countries and the rest of the world. The Chinese defense minister also noted that China had achieved impressive progress in the field of nuclear weapons. Wei, however, noted that Beijing will only use them for defending the nation, never starting a nuclear war, nor ever use nuclear weapons first. He pointed out that the ultimate purpose of China's nuclear arsenal is to prevent a nuclear war.
The second congressional hearing into the U.S. Capitol riot has kicked off. The investigation is looking into former President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election, despite knowing that he had lost the vote.
This morning, we'll tell the story of how Donald Trump lost an election and knew he lost an election, and as a result of his loss, decided to wage an attack on our democracy, an attack on the American people by trying to rob you of your voice in our democracy, and in doing so, lit the fuse that led to the horrific violence of January 6th, when a mob of his supporters stormed the Capitol sent by Donald Trump to stop the transfer of power.
A former top campaign aide to Trump, his ex-campaign manager, and his daughter Ivanka all testified that they did not believe the then president could declare victory on election night. The first hearing was held last week and focused on Trump's role and highlighted the violent nature of the attack on the Capitol building. A select committee investigating the incident says it's gathered enough evidence for a criminal indictment of Trump. This is unprecedented, as no sitting or former U.S. president has ever been indicted. Trump supporters attacked the Capitol building when Congress was certifying President Joe Biden's victory. The attack left several people dead. Trump has denied wrongdoing. He and his supporters dismissed the Democratic-led select committee as a political witch hunt.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson is being warned that he will repeat the mistakes of Partygate by backing rule-breaking over the rule of law when he publishes plans on Monday, 13th of June, that are expected to prompt a new Tory rebellion over Brexit. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Observer's political editor, Michael Savage. The piece is titled, Boris Johnson Warned Northern Ireland Protocol Rule-Breaking Will Repeat Mistakes of Partygate. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson is being warned that he will repeat the mistakes of Partygate by backing rule-breaking over the rule of law when he publishes plans on Monday, 13th of June, that are expected to prompt a new Tory rebellion over Brexit. Frantic legal and political negotiations have been taking place this week among Boris Johnson, his cabinet and MPs, in advance of the government's bill designed to improve trade between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom. The legislation is to be published on Monday, 13th of June. The government had received legal warnings that any plan that overrides the existing agreement with the European Union, the Northern Ireland Protocol, could be deemed illegal. However, despite claims that the bill had been watered down, two sources told The Observer that it still contains clauses that effectively sideline parts of the existing agreement. Tensions are now running high, and publication of the bill is likely to reopen the Brexit issue among Conservatives. One Conservative source said, "The government is lying to its own MPs and the media about the illegal focus of this bill." The Tory party is sleepwalking into a repeat of the Owen Paterson vote and Partygate, yet again positioning the party full square in support of lawbreaking over the rule of law. It comes after days of claim and counterclaim over the contents of Monday's bill. Some insiders claimed that the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, and Levelling Up Secretary Michael Gove had successfully prevented the proposals from becoming too hardline and provoking a fierce response from the European Union. There have also been claims that Sir James Edie, the first Treasury counsel, had not been asked for his legal opinion on key elements of the proposals. Whitehall sources insisted he was happy and now overseeing all the legal issues relating to the bill. However, others with knowledge of the discussion said key clauses were still included that effectively override the existing agreement, a move that will anger Brussels and cause a major rebellion on the Tory benches. The Labour Party has already said it will oppose attempts to override the existing Northern Ireland protocol. There is still a row taking place over what legal advice the government has received over its proposals. Sources told The Observer that key elements of legal advice were not presented to the Cabinet Committee overseeing the plans. There are also claims that both Rishi Sunak and Michael Gove were bypassed and prevented from seeing the final version of the legislation, though this is disputed by government sources. It has also been established that views on the legality of the proposals were taken from Tom Grant, an academic lawyer who worked in the United States State Department during the Trump administration. He has been advising on the bill and has previously written legal articles supporting a very hard Brexit. Whitehall sources said while he offered advice, he was not a central part of the legal team. Alistair Carmichael, the Liberal Democrat MP who has been asking House of Commons questions about the legal advice relating to the plan, said, "It is a sad indictment of this Conservative government's desperation to justify their reckless plan that they are taking advice from a former aide to Donald Trump. The government must finally come clean on its attempts to shop around for bargain basement legal advice. We need full transparency over what advice was given and who from." Some moderate MPs said they had been assured that Rishi Sunak and Michael Gove had made sure the proposals are not too hardline. What will emerge won't enrapture pro-Brexit Tory group the ERG, said one source.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us ponder a short but sweet saying from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. Refrain from using unlawfully obtained construction materials in your building, for these will ruin it.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. In previous episodes, we were talking about how superpowers and the fathers of the Charter of Human Rights, they themselves are the ones who are depriving people of their own nations and people of other countries their most basic fundamental rights. Let's take an example, because we want to see the violations that have been done by those countries, by those who are claimed to be the champions of human rights. Take China, for example. Yeah, China, I agree, is a communist country. It's a country where just the normal people don't have the right to talk or the right to express their freedoms. So there's a lot happening. But within China, we have the Muslims, the Uyghurs who live in Xinjiang in China, and they are, you know, I don't know, they make about 25% of that province, or even more, just a bit less than half. Millions of them are being prosecuted under the crimes that have been done towards them are, it's just, you know, too hard to even talk about. For example, human beings have the right to live, right? Those Muslims, those minority in China, they don't have the right to live. The only time they have the right to live is when they follow what the government tells them. So, for example, we see them, they're trying to, when it comes to women, for example, they're trying to make sure that women do not give birth to any more kids. So they do not reproduce. And that's a crime that China is doing towards Muslims. So they're trying to inject all these female women with hormones that stop them from giving birth. It's a problem. That's a crime against humanity. This is what we call ethnic cleansing, because he's trying to make sure that these particular people and this particular, at least let's say, tribe, they do not exist in, let's say, 50, 60, 80 years from now. I mean, where is the human rights then when those people are prosecuted in this regard? That's one. When we see people themselves, they do not have freedom, meaning there are hundreds of thousands of Muslims are in concentration camps in China where they are pretty much prisoners, and they have no freedom to go outside. They are in a camp. We ask the questions, where are those who claim to be champions of human rights? Why aren't they saying anything when they see that happening? Unless they can come and say, well, these guys are not human, so we don't care about them. They are from a different planet, and they are, you know, worse than animals, because if there was a dog or an animal being, or a panda being punished or being abused, you will see the whole world in a roar when it comes to human rights. When it comes to animal rights. But when it comes to human rights, no one seems to care. Millions of people in China being prosecuted, and no one is saying a word. No one is even caring. You don't even hear about it in the news. I would say 90% of the world, of the dwellers of the world, of human beings, they don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, what? Muslims in China being prosecuted since when? People don't even know. Even Muslims themselves, most of them, if not almost all of them, they don't have an idea. Let us take a break and then we'll come back right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, I was getting excited, or more like saddened, talking about the Muslims in China who are suffering so much because of their faith. So we said when it comes to the right of living, they are being cleansly. You know, there's a cleansing, that what we call ethical cleansing. They've been terminated from their roots. When it comes to their freedom, they are being imprisoned. When it comes to their religious, just doing their religious beliefs. I mean, why would it harm you if I pray and fast and apply my religion? I'm not doing anyone any harm. Why is it that in China, for these Muslims, they cannot pray? They cannot read Quran, they cannot fast, they cannot practice any form of religion. Even to the extent that the Chinese government, they turned the mosques into museums where people go and watch, not to perform prayer. If you pray outside, or if they know that you are praying, you get imprisoned. I mean, don't take my word for it. Go on YouTube and see for yourself. That even I saw one of the people who went to this area, he could not, even when he says salamun alaikum to people, they wouldn't reply to him out of fear. They can't say the word, because if they do, they might be prosecuted. So when it comes to their faith, to their belief, they are also prosecuted. To even go further, those Muslims in China, to make sure that they violate every aspect of their rights, even when it comes to food and drinking, they don't have the freedom to do that. They are, those who are in the concentration camps, they are being fed pigs and alcohol. No, China, obviously, the government, they know that Muslims, it's forbidden for them to consume alcohol and pig's meat, or at least haram meat. But they are deliberately feeding them pigs and giving them alcohol, just so they could take their beliefs away from them forcefully. Again, we get to say, where are those who speak about human rights? I mean, at least give them the right to practice their religion. Now, if you, under the pretext that, oh, well, if you're religious, you're a terrorist, then, well, I mean, surely you have intelligence agency that can determine who's a terrorist, who's not. But you can't generalize that to millions of people. Millions of people, they can't all be terrorists. Maybe out of these millions, maybe you have 1,000, 2,000. All right, go 10,000. But what about the rest of innocent people? Kids, families, women, old men, young people. They're all being prosecuted. They can't practice their faith. They can't eat halal food. They can't pray outside. They can't go to the mosques. They can't even fast. Then where is the human right here? So again, when we look at the superpowers and we say, well, since you, United Nations and China is part of you, then how come they not applying it? Shouldn't be applied? Or is that they are excluded from the list? What's going on here? We leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Five young and rare Bonelli's eagles born on a breeding farm in France are taking a journey to Spain, where they will be released into the wild. These eaglets were born in captivity, which is a rare feat for this endangered species. Three of the five are ready to be released and have been fitted with GPS microchips for tracking purposes. Their initial release date was delayed because of several weeks of bird flu, which made traveling impossible. The other two eagles are too young to be reintroduced and are still being hand-fed from behind the curtain. They will make the journey sometime in July. The breeders, however, are worried about how to sustain the program as their birds begin to age.
The Bonelli's eagle is a species that is relatively scarce. In France, we must have about 40 couples, something like that, who produce about 20 chicks per year. Here, we have five chicks, but my birds are very old. Still, five chicks is not nothing for a species which relies on a small reproduction number.
Pacto also says his five pairs of eagles are aged between 18 and 30 years, and three of them are now too old to breed. He says the number of Bonelli's eagles had dropped dramatically since the 1980s, mainly to electrocution on high-voltage lines. Due to the reintroduction program, the population of these eagles has nearly doubled over the past two decades. A Belgian company is trying to combat urban waste by transforming used coffee grounds into edible mushrooms that can also be used in construction. The mycelium is grown in a damp cellar in Brussels. Some 5 tons of coffee grounds are collected each month from partner cafes. They are then mixed in drums where the oyster mushroom spores are added and mixed with straw in a sack. The mushrooms emerge from slashes in the sacks 15 days afterwards and are ready to be sent to shops for sales. The business owners say they are looking to expand their business and use coffee and mushrooms as an environmentally friendly alternative to plastic.
Each day we throw away a lot of coffee, and this coffee to be produced needs a lot of energy from the cultivation to the transportation to Europe, and it's just a pity not to use it more than a few minutes to drink a coffee.
The company has already tested out its fungus-based insulating tiles and received its first order of these tiles for soundproofing purposes. Jacket says they hope to produce 12 tons of the mycelium material per month when they gather enough investment. The business owner says there is no shortage of raw material as coffee is widely consumed in Belgium. Jacket says the innovation can dramatically cut down on plastic waste.
China launches three astronauts to its Tiangong space station as its construction enters a critical phase. The three blasted off from a launch center in northwestern China. They are the second group of astronauts to head to the space station since its construction began in April 2021. They will stay there for 6 months. The space station is planned as a three-section structure. The core module was launched in April, and two more components will be sent into space in July and September. The new mission will oversee the integration of the three parts. The crew's commander has described the task as a pivotal battle in the construction of Tiangong, which is planned to be completed by the end of 2022.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock. It's been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached a length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born, although there were times when I had seen his mustache short. My dad is famous for his mustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his mustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Thousands of children are victims of gun violence each year, yet weapons of war remain easily available for purchase. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Sonali Kaltakar Ryder. This article is published under the heading, How Long Will the U.S. Sacrifice Kids for the Gun Lobby? Here's more. Mass shootings are good for gun sales. In the days following the horrific school massacre in Texas, firearm stocks rose. Gun buyers, conditioned to fear new restrictions, tend to run out and buy more weapons after shootings like this one. They seem to believe that lawmakers will respond to mass shootings by making it harder to buy a gun. After all, when other consumer products are found to be a danger to humans, they are regulated. Last year, the federal government recalled 40,000 units from a line of children's bunk beds whose defective ladder killed a 2-year-old in Ohio. And the U.S. Public Interest Research Group offers a lengthy list of toys the U.S. government has recalled because of choking hazards. It makes sense to regulate harmful products, especially where children's health and safety are concerned. But thousands of children are victims of gun violence each year, yet weapons of war remain easily available for purchase. The Ovald shooter bought two AR-15-style rifles legally from a federally licensed gun store just days before the massacre and used one of them to end 21 lives. After Ovald, a group of pediatricians published a plea for gun control in Scientific American. The doctors pointed out that gun violence is now the leading cause of death among people aged 1 to 19. The politicization of guns, they wrote, is taking priority over public health. How else to explain the endless proliferation of killing machines when we won't even tolerate a faulty ladder? Many factors drive this politicization. For one thing, gun sales are big business. Some manufacturers with federal contracts even use their profits to lobby against gun control. For another, the National Rifle Association holds great sway in Washington and drives large campaign donations to GOP politicians to ensure inaction. But at heart, this is a cultural problem. Hollywood, for example, glamorizes guns the way it once did smoking. Researchers Brad Bushman and Dan Romer found that acts of gun violence in PG-13 movies nearly tripled between 1985 and 2015. But even more dangerously, guns have become central to the right-wing's culture wars. They have become synonymous with a perverse understanding of freedom and defense, a word that appears in the name of the manufacturer Daniel Defense, whose rifle was used to kill children in Ovald. Defense for whom? Violent crime and property crime rates nationwide have dramatically fallen since 1990s. Studies show that guns are extremely rarely used in self-defense. They are much more often involved in assaults, homicides, suicides, or accidental discharges. This is a charade, says Tufts public health professor Michael Siegel of the self-defense troop. Instead, the freedom to defend oneself has become a powerful cultural idea for a shrinking white population whose paranoia is being stoked incessantly by Fox News, the Republican Party, and gun manufacturers. In one commercial, Daniel Defense founder Marty Daniel narrates, "There are two types of people in the world, good people and evil people. And just in case evil people get in charge, good people need to have the ability to fight back." Siegel says this is a racialized fear. The far right's mostly white male gun owners are so convinced of this imagined threat from evil others that some openly speculated that Oswald Schutter must have been an illegal alien or a woman. He was neither. A majority of Americans support gun restrictions, but the GOP gerrymanders, districts, and relies on the undemocratic Senate and Supreme Court to keep this paranoid minority in power. And as a result, their hate-filled fantasies have made it all but impossible to regulate the leading cause of children's death. Eventually, the pro-gun control majority must ask, how long will we pay for this system with the lives of our children?
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that's been affecting the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss the emergence of India as a key player in the global pharmaceutical market, ready to cut its dependence on China. And we shall also take a look at how the war in Ukraine has exposed the duplicity of Western countries who have conveniently turned their focus away from Afghanistan.
The world's third largest manufacturer of medicine by volume, India, is taking giant strides in the global pharmaceutical industry. The country today exports medicine to more than 200 countries and supplies 20% of the global demand for generic drugs.